Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Cool.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Now, right now.
Now it's time to do the right thing.
That's right. We are going to do it right, and we're going to figure out today how we can do it right, or at least do it better. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And this is going to be the last show of the year. I know last week we missed out because we had a little snafu with guest. And so, yeah, so we missed that one. But, you know, we've been pretty consistent all year, but this will be the last one. And we hope the next time that you see me, I will be in the studio of Black Radio Hall of Fame. And so I've already been told by Mr. Bernie Hayes that they are working on the studio. So that is encouraging for me and the other folks who use that studio. And so we're wishing for the best, because you get to do so much more in the studio than when you do it on your own laptop. So I'm looking forward to that. And there's some new ideas that I want to make happen, manifest next year. But having that studio is the big piece of it. So, you know, this has been an incredible year in more ways than one. And I do want to talk about the fact that we still have a pathological liar in the White House. We have a 34 count felon in the White House, and we have, at least at this point, we have a protector of pedophiles. So as the more documents that are released in the Epstein file, the more that we might be able to confirm whether or not there was participation. But at this point, we know from emails that have been disclosed that Donald Trump knew that young girls were involved in this grown-ass man's sleepover. So I'm thinking that there's more to come. But here's the thing. Once we find out, now what? Or is it just going to be so what? And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in the show. But I want to give you some updates first, because the reason, also one of the reasons why there's not a guest other than myself, is because I thought I was going to be in Jefferson City in trial. For those of you who have been following, you know that Rogers, the state of Missouri, is the case involving the takeover or the power grab of the state of Missouri for our St. Louis Police Department. So I am one of the plaintiffs, as well as Mike Milton with FCC Freedom Center. And that trial would have been today. It's been rescheduled to February 19th. And we're going to give you more information and more reminders about that. But I would have been there. So I didn't want to schedule a guest and not be able to do the show. So when they canceled, I said, looks like it's going to be me. And I have a lot to say, because this has been such a year. It's been a heavy one for me, but I think it's been a heavy one for a number of people. There seems like there's been so much loss. And for us in St. Louis, we were hit with an E3 tornado back in May that we still have not recovered from. And when I say recovered, I mean psychologically, I mean physically, I mean all of the levels. We have not. Homes are still unbuilt. Tarps are still on people's homes. Folks are still sleeping in tents. So we have not fully recovered. There's lots of rhetoric, lots of we gonna do this, but the bottom line is that the folks who were able to have any modicum of progress is because they had the resources and they had the will and the discipline to move forward. And everybody does not have that. And that's not a judgment. That's just the way that we are. That's the way we, the society has shaped us. So I've seen some progress because I'm through those neighborhoods often. And I see the progress that they're making in the Central West End because they do have the resources. They don't have to depend on the mayor's goodwill. They are moving forward. But even in the communities on the north side, people are making incremental progress through their own, and of course the village that's around them helping them to do that. And so I just want us to remember that, not only because it's the holidays, but because sometimes when things go off the news, they're out of our memory, our collective memory, our collective vision, and we forget. And we got lots of other distractions, and some of them are valid distractions. Some of it is about our own survival, about our own well-being and self-care. So I get that. But there are still people who need our assistance. And folks are still out there that are organized to be out there, like Action St. Louis, like 314 Oasis with Dr. Punch and her incredible team. So there's not this, there's places where we can go if we want to feel the presence of community. And I'm going to be talking about those as well. So one of the updates I wanted to give you is around the fact that the trial today that involves the oversight of the police department and the snatching of our local police department and putting it up under the state was an arbitrary move, was, as far as we're concerned, an illegal move. And we want to challenge that. And I think that's the thing that I want us to remember. We cannot let this stuff just stand. We cannot let injustices just stand and say, oh, isn't that too bad? Oh, why are they doing that? And I'm telling y'all, I'm getting a little disappointed, but also well, I'm gonna leave it at disappointment. When we feel these injustices, when we see, for example, over the last week, we had three major acts of violence, and we felt that in different ways. One of them was, in Australia, which seems like a long ways away, but it's not unlike what we've seen here in this country. And so all of these things are connected. And then there was the loss of Bob Ryder and his wife to allegedly to his son, and that raises a whole issue of what do you do for a loved one who has addiction, who has mental health issues? And that's a very difficult situation to be in. Some loved ones, to their own safety, have said cut them off because the safety of the rest of the family is at stake, not just for one person. And so those are the kind of decisions that have to be made sometimes. But I think most people who have had a loved one drug addicted or mental health or both of those in combinations, we did have some kind of feeling for what had happened with the Reiners, and particularly the feeling of the siblings who now are faced with one of their own who is responsible for the death of their parents. So, but the level of violence is increasing, y'all. And I think one of the things that touches me is that people will often say, especially when it's closer to home, this has got to stop. Enough is enough. And I'm thinking, when people are saying that, who are they talking to? Because we have to see what role we can play in the reduction or the elimination or the refocusing of violence. And so I think this is my own personal opinion. When we say that, we are saying we are helpless. For sure, we're saying we're hopeless, but we're also saying we're helpless. And that's not true. That's absolutely not true. So when we say enough is enough, I think we should follow up. And here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I've carved out. Here's going to be my part. Because again, when we say enough is enough, who are we talking to? Who do we expect to come to our rescue? The government? The police? The courts? This is a no-brainer, y'all. It's going to be about us. This is, we are the fourth branch of government, the people. And so when we decide we've had enough and that we are going to own a part of the problem so that we are not part of the problem, we're going to own that, and we're going to find other people who believe that something is wrong and needs to be fixed. And again, for folks like me who believe that the people who are closest to the problem are going to be the ones who have to solve it, I still believe that to the core. And so when we say, and we see people on the television all the time saying, this has got to stop. Okay, who's going to stop it? Who is going to stop it? It is going to be us. When we get enough sorrow and grief, and when we become victims or our family become victims, then is that the only time that we were going to be responsive? I hope not. I hope that we have enough empathy, enough humanity to say, this is not the kind of world that I want to live in. This is not the kind of world that I want my grandchildren growing up in. This is not the world that we deserve. Some of us are working hard every day, trying to make ends meet. We are focused on survival. So why do we also have to be worried about our own life, our very lives? But we do. That is now a part of living. Dodging, it's almost like rain. The violence in this country is like rain. You go out there, eventually that raindrop is going to hit you. So if you don't want that raindrop to hit you, then you're going to get your umbrella. And that umbrella represents the resistance, organized resistance to what is going on out there, so that you shelter not just yourself, but the people around you. So raindrops are falling, y'all. They falling fast. And so I think we got to own parts of the solution so that we are not part of the problem. I also want to talk a little bit about what's happening with the, I've been reporting on, and a couple of weeks ago we had somebody, a couple of folks from the Politicians Not Profit Coalition. And so you probably saw on the news that we collected and turned in 302,000 signatures. Maybe not. I'm gonna say, to be on the safe side, we turned in 300 plus thousand signatures. These are statewide. We had 3 months to do that, y'all. And I believe we only had to collect 125,000, something like that. But we went well beyond what we were supposed to. That's because we know these folks got tricks up their sleeves, and they're gonna try to throw out legitimate signatures. And so we wanted to be ready for all of that. We've been through this before. We are not new to this rodeo. We know how treacherous they can be with these signatures, because once it's on the ballot, then it's going to be truly up to the voters. And so so they try to keep that from happening. So what we know that you've heard, you've gotten some misinformation from the news. One of that is that map, the map that's redistricting the state of Missouri, is going into effect, regardless of the signatures. That is not true. Once that ballot, once the ballot was accepted by the state, the Secretary of State, all of that had to cease. And the way that the ballot reads is that map, nothing can happen until it gets on the ballot next year. And so I think even the governor has said something like the map is still going forward. It cannot. Now, does that mean that it won't? Because all the illegal stuff that these people are doing, we can't guarantee that it's not. But the law says that it's not supposed to go forward. The fact that there were signatures, the fact that there was a referendum, the fact that now those signatures have been, those ballots have been turned in, means that all of that ceases. And so help spread that word, because then people say, oh, we did all those signatures for nothing. No, we did not. And, you know, win, lose, or draw, I want you to remember what that represents. I told you that it was 300,000 signatures. What does that mean? That means there were 300,000 conversations with real life people. That's how you organize. It's not just that signature. That's in the end, the goal is to get that so we get it on the ballot. But you're engaging people in a process. You're engaging people in educating them about a process. Because a lot of people don't know that that map even existed. And so we have to be very clear on who and where our trusted messengers are and where we can find them, because that's going to be important in the days ahead. We have a administration that is hell-bent on destroying free speech unless it's MAGA speech. So, and we know that it's serious when they go after the comedians who speak truth to power in a different kind of way. They do it through humor. But nevertheless, though that's coming through, and they know that, so that's why there was the thing about Jimmy Kimmel. But when that starts happening, we know we in trouble. But we've also seen major corporations bend to the knee. CBS, the person headed that up, basically resigned to say the folks were meddling in the business of broadcasting, and they have, and they are. We've seen people get taken off the air under the guise of, under the guise of low ratings or funding, and that's not it at all. These people are trying to censor folks who have the ear of people, and sometimes it's not like everybody, but it's a broad enough base that they are continuing to educate people about what's going on in this country. So I'm going to tell you, just keeping it real, because all of us may not be on the air. This is a privilege. We saw how, for example, the guy who did the app, so it's called ICE, but it allows you to track ICE. He created that app to help people know when ICE is in their community so that everybody can contact everybody else. And basically, the administration called up Apple and said, "We need to get that out the store so people don't buy it." And Apple complied. So, this is what I'm saying, y'all. These people all in cahoots with each other. It ain't about free speech. Now, the people who have that ICE blocker now, that app now, can continue to use it, but new folks can't find it because it's not in the App Store anymore. So the control and the power that they have, we're going to have to find ways to match that. So these are platforms that we are now accustomed to using. These are platforms that have made it convenient for us to communicate with each other to get information, but they may not always be available, and that's what I'm trying to get through to you. We need to come up with where we're going to get our news, our information, and who is the trusted messenger. Because who you think is going to be on tomorrow may not be, given the trajectory of what we're seeing now. And it's just interesting that comedians are under attack. So, but I think, the fact that they try to get the most vulnerable people first to see what the reaction is, and then from there, keep going. But yeah. But there was some bright spots last week, this past week, and one of them is the return of indigenous and African antiquities. Now, I'm not quite sure what has prompted this. It's been really kind of amazing. So the Nazis weren't the only one who stole art and artifacts. The colonial thieves did as well. So in the North America, there were many artifacts taken from indigenous people, and particularly by the Netherlands, who now have returned that. But there's so many more that's still out there that, folks don't even know where they are. But then, there was Nigeria, the what they call the Bronze Benin. Those were returned. And so what is that all about? I don't know if they had like some kind of goat of guilt come visit them, but these are part of people's culture and history. If you look at the anthropological way that people have built civilizations, those artifacts are a critical part of that. And so when those are missing and you have these gaps in your own people's development, that's a missing link for sure. And so I know the indigenous people were overjoyed to get those back, but they also paused to say it's many more out there that still belong to us that need to be returned. And that's for sure the truth. But yeah, the antiquities in Africa, whether it be Nigeria or, you know, Egypt, you know, they're in somebody's home above the mantelpiece. They might be in a museum, but they are not in their rightful places. Let's just say it like that. So, you know, that's on us too. So when we see something that looks awry, we better be saying, why is that here? And did we get permission from those people to have it here? And, you know, we got to ask the question. If that's all we do is ask the questions. So one of the things that has been in the news quite a bit is Venezuela. I had the opportunity and the privilege of going to Venezuela some years ago, and I found the people very warm, very welcoming, very humble. And that was at the time that Presidente was still president, and they all had their constitutions that they had helped to write and to approve, and they were in it. They were in building their democracy. They were into understanding how government works, and to see what's happening now to them is just sad. But this whole deal of what Trump and his War Department are doing, you know, to first of all, we don't know who these people are that being shot out of the water. And I almost liken it to when in the South, where white racists would have black men start running, black women too for that matter, and then they shot them down like dogs. So when I look at what's happening with the Venezuela boats, I'm just thinking this is target practice. They're testing out weapons and they're using poor Venezuelan fishermen probably to do this. And they've done it like numerous times, and we have not done anything. We have not raised our voices to say, whoa, what? And I know we're waiting for the folks in Congress to do that. And we see that they have no backbone and very few of them are going to do that. But this man every day has punked us in some kind of way, trying to see if he can get a rise out of us. And there's not been that collective rise. And we need to understand why so that we can fix that. Because the more power we give him, the less that we're going to have. And I'm talking about, when I say less, I'm not just talking in monetary terms. I'm talking about rights and life. So the Venezuelan thing is about, what did he say it's about? It's about drugs. Really? Here's somebody that just pardoned the former president of Honduras, who smuggled into the U.S. 400 tons, not kilos, not pounds, 400 tons of cocaine. He was convicted, but now he's pardoned, as if he did not do a thing. So how is it that you can pardon a convicted drug smuggler who was about to bring 400 tons of cocaine into your country, but you're after these little speedboats that are in the Caribbean? So some of this, y'all, I'm not even gonna say it should be common sense when you look at it, because I know sense is not as common as it used to be. And for good reason, because they have dulled our senses with, you know, social media, with the messaging, with all of this stuff that just turns our heads inside out. But what we are living in is not real. And the fantasy that's being created by MAGA is for them. They're having a ball with this. You know, when you look at them, sometimes in these press conferences, they think this is a game. You know, they think this is fun. But people's lives are actually at stake. And so that Venezuelan situation is not about drugs. It's not about narco-terrorists, which is a term that they've are starting to use so that they can justify the cry for war. What they are really trying to do, and they've already seized that one tanker that had millions of gallons of oil, that's what it's about. They are trying to get in there to get that oil. Now, some people have likened this to the what's happening now with the policy around Venezuela is similar to the Monroe Doctrine. And I know people don't really remember the Monroe Doctrine. You learned about it in school, but really it was about the US looking at the Caribbean and saying these people could be a threat to us, and so we have to either neutralize them or bring them into the fold. And in some ways, they've been doing that over the years. That was in the 1800s, the Monroe Doctrine. But they have not forgotten Haiti, nor will they ever forget that Toussaint Louverture brought France to his knees, brought Napoleon to his knees. I know he didn't have very far to go, but he still brought him down. And so they have made an example out of Haiti for all of these decades, because the notion that you had a small country like that, that had a fierce, small but fierce army that brought down the French Empire, that's the kind of stuff that's just not going to be taught in history. And so every time they fear some aggression, and most of these countries in the Caribbean are small, but I have to remind you what happened to Grenada, which is another small island. They invaded that and killed off Maurice Bishop. So the Monroe Doctrine has been in place, and we didn't call it by that name, but every time there's an attack on those Caribbean islands or people try to assert their independence, something bad happens to them. Either the US snatches back money or they send in an army, but they are going to get you together one way or the other. So we need to be mindful of that, even if it's not the doctrine. If it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably going to be a duck. So Venezuela is a big one in that one because of that oil. So let's not go for the okey doke that it's about drugs. When you let somebody that was bringing in 400, not only did he bring in 400 tons, he then said, "We're gonna put blow cocaine up the gringo's nose." So he's just arrogant, like. And what I see in terms of drugs, this is how I look at drugs. It's chemical warfare. It is definitely chemical warfare. So we don't have to shoot people, particularly in black and brown communities. We just let them shoot themselves up with crack cocaine, crack, heroin, whatever, and then we don't have to deal with them. So warfare comes in different forms, and we are definitely you're talking about the drug wars, the war on drugs. We've been the war, the brunt of the war on drugs ever since they claimed it in the 70s. So have the drugs stopped? No, the drugs won't stop you all until the demand. And this is a country we are so unhappy, so messed up that we have to have drugs to survive day to day. So as long as that's there, the drug suppliers are going to keep us happy. And so no amount, this is my opinion, no amount of legislation is going to help that. That has to be the people in this country say, "I don't need drugs. I'm not giving my money to some damn drug dealer in another place and get them rich, and my poor family is suffering. That's not what I'm gonna be doing. I'm gonna be exercising my right to live, my right to live in a sane and civil way, and that's what I'm gonna do with my money." So we got some choices here, and I want us to be more cognizant about why things are happening to us the way that they're happening to us, so that we don't get it confused that somehow we don't have any control over this. Every day since January, since that man was inaugurated, we've gotten punked every day. Every day. Sometimes a couple of times a day. So the notion is, when will people stand up? I was listening to a interview with Leslie Jones, and Leslie Jones, who used to be on Saturday Night Live, is a black comedian. But one of the things that she said about what she thinks is why people are not responding is that they are scared and that we've become complacent. And I think there's some truth to that. I mean, I do believe people are scared, and not just scared like, ooh, but scared that somehow if they step out, then they lose some of the conveniences that they have. If they shut down the internet now, it's going to be a major, major rebellion. But we had 42 million people on SNAP that were about to go hungry because these fools shut down the government and said the hell with SNAP. And let me just tell you a couple of things about SNAP. Some people think, oh, it's just lazy people on SNAP that's not working. 30% of the people who receive SNAP work full time. Another 30% work part time or occasionally. So that means 60% of people who are working still need food stamps. I want y'all to think about that. Still need food stamps. So while Trump was giving Argentina $50 million to help them out, we had folks going into the pantries trying to get food for their families, working people trying to get food for their families. So, the contradictions are blaring, that we can't escape them. One of the memes that I saw recently that really struck me was that Congress is allotted a daily meal stipend of $79 a day. A day, y'all. They get 79. That's whether they eat or not. They could bring their lunch and they still gonna get that stipend. $79 a day. So if you do that times seven, then times 52 weeks, think about what that. But here's the catcher. The average SNAP benefit per person is $188 for 1 month. And these folks were about to deny folks even that. They get $79 a day. And whose money is that? That's our money, you all. And I know y'all don't like when I keep reminding you, like people are stealing your money and you sitting up there letting them go in your pocket. But that $79 is not Mike Johnson. That's not Massey. That's not even AOC. That's our money. We allow them to have that in service of us. But are they serving us? No. So $79, almost $80 they get a day to eat. And they probably get money from other places to eat. So that's just some discretionary money that they will have. But SNAP people will get $188 a month. Do the math. Do the math, y'all. It's more than a notion, the world that we are living in, but we got to take some responsibility for it, y'all. We got to see how we're going to get ourselves out of that because we can't be saying, stop it, enough is enough. And the people that are creating the madness, they like, you depending on us to do that? Yeah, you dummies. So we got to figure it out. But a couple of other things I just want to get in here because there have been lots of distractions for us in this country. And some of it is so that we don't pay attention, obviously, to the Epstein files and to some of the other things that Trump is doing, even though Project 2025 told us exactly what was going to be done. And it's, that playbook is being followed pretty much to the T. And so it's not like we did not know. I think what I saw happening is like people didn't believe it. Now, why they didn't believe Trump was going to do this stuff, when you look at what he's done already in private life, we should have really believed that. And so the naivety that keeps us from moving and keeps us looking for other people to step up, it has not worked for us, y'all. It has not worked for us. And so when we talk about how focused we're going to have to be in 2026, a lot of times people are putting a bunch of bets on 2026 midterms. A lot of damage can be done between now and midterms. Think about what's been done in the last 11 months, 12 months. So we can't afford anymore. We really can't. The more this man gets away with, the deeper the hole that we're going to have to climb out of. And some of us, we're not going to climb out of this. I tell you why. The Republicans have said they are not going to extend Obamacare. That's the Affordable Health Care Act that subsidizes people's health care. They're filling that gap. Well, what do you think happens when all of those people cannot get health care? You think some of those people are not going to die? They're already predicting that what Kennedy has done with the hepatitis vaccines for babies, they're going to be babies and children that would die. So why are they killing us? Why are they creating policies that literally are going to kill us? Well, there's a surplus. AI has proven that every day. Some of us are not needed. We're going to be taking up space. That's the way they look at it. We're taking up space because there is no way we can be productive in the world that they are trying to create. So for somebody to knowingly say, we're not going to extend health benefits for people even who have current medical conditions, that's some evil people there. That is evil people. And then match that up with they're now predicting one out of three Americans are going to be diagnosed with some form of cancer. Cancer treatments cost big money. I keep telling y'all, there's not enough GoFundMes out there for everybody's situation. We're going to have to fight this on a systemic basis, not individual basis. We don't have that much, that kind of money. In fact, we're going to have less money after this year because the tariffs are already tore up the economy. All the food that we eat, the basic stuff that we need, has gone up. Our salaries are still flat. So we are not going to have disposable money for medical emergencies. People now cannot afford their prescriptions, their life-saving prescriptions. And all these people, again, I'm going to say they're in cahoots with each other. When you had the Sackler family who made billions off of oxycodone, they still walking around. They walking around in the lifestyles that they created for themselves off the deaths of our children. They created a habit-forming drug that would keep people strung out for decades, decades. And when you see them, they're wrapped in luxury, doing their thing as if nothing happened. But yet, these are the folks who we should be going after when we talk about going after some little fishing boats in the Caribbean. They have ruined, not, and this is not just black folks or brown folks. A lot of white folks got caught up in this, and not just poor white folks. That stuff is so potent that the promise of addiction is guaranteed almost. And that's why most doctors will tell you can only take it for this amount of time because after then, you're going to be a goner. You're going to be attracted, addicted to that monster for a long, long time. So we got some major contradictions. The fentanyl drug is related to the Sackler family. Did y'all hear what I said? Fentanyl is part of that family. That's not what is coming from Venezuela. This reminds me of, remember when the 9/11 happened and it was the Saudis that did that, and then they said we're gonna go after Bin Laden. What? Huh? What that no, he wasn't it. It doesn't matter because they know we don't even understand geography. Fentanyl epidemic here in this country, and then they're going to try to pretend like it's coming from Venezuela. So, and then the other thing is like, as we try to find out more about this stuff so that we can be woke, they have criminalized even the word woke. They don't want you to be informed, they don't want you to be motivated to know more about how this stuff is happening. But you're going to have to understand it because it's happening to you and your family. It's happening to you and your community. We are not here in a vacuum. Almost everything in other parts of the world affect us because our government has tentacles all over the place. that is destroying other cultures, other peoples, other environments. And so when people say, things are going on in those countries, and we say, how can we help y'all? How we want to be supportive. They say, get y'all damn government together, put a check on them. That's what you can do for us. And so we haven't yet done that. We should be bringing these folks down every day. Again, we're getting punked. And even he, I mean, even when I look at the media, y'all, he berates these people at these press conferences, particularly the black reporters and the rest of the media. See, the first time he said, we are not going to call the Gulf of Mexico Mexico anymore. And the only media that I remember standing up was the AP. And they're like, well, no, because we're international and people don't know. When we say the United States, they're not going to know what that means, to know where that is. We're going to continue to say the Gulf of Mexico. Of course, they were pretty much berated again. But the rest of the folks, I just said, oh, I know they're going to organize it. But nothing. Crickets. And so it seems like Leslie Jones is right. We are scared. We are scared. And the ones who aren't scared, we've complacent because we want to have a certain, we want to have certain conveniences. And so to acknowledge that some of this is real means that we got to do something. We got to own our part of it, what we can do. So when I know that there was a statewide coalition of folks, mainly volunteers, wasn't a whole lot of getting paid for this, collected over 300,000 signatures all across this state. That was an act of resistance. Because we said, we're not going to let you change the map illegally. We're not going to let you redistrict, particularly redistrict out the only black congressperson in Kansas City. No, we're not going to sit here and let you do that. No. You're going to look like you were in a fight, even if you win. So what I'm saying, y'all, is I'm not going to be on the air for the next 2 weeks. And a lot of people kind of take off during that time. You got Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, all of that going on. But what I'm hoping is that we get refueled, retooled, drop some pounds so we can come out fighting January 1 because our communities are dependent on it and our lives are dependent on it. And so don't get caught up in the okey-doke, especially, I was talking about betting. This whole thing that's coming to Missouri now that everybody's hyping up, where you pay $5 and get $300 to bet. Oh no, that's another addiction, y'all. We don't need any more distractions, addictions, anything that's pulling you away from fighting for the life you deserve, not a fantasy life. I hope I win this. I hope, I hope, I hope. No. We got to fight for reality. This is real, what we're dealing with now. That $5 you gonna bet is gonna probably turn into a $5,000 loss, where you probably gonna be homeless, no food, car, no car. All of that happens when people have gambling addiction. So beware of that little thing. So I'm gonna say, this came up last week when I was talking to Jeribu Hill and Loretta Ross. We have to have a love for our people and a profound hatred for the systems of oppression. And you got to know what those systems are. And most of them are interlocking systems that are smothering us, literally smothering us. But if you got to fight, it's because you love yourself and your people, and you have a profound hatred for the systems of oppression and anybody that's propping those things up. So very simply, here's some things that I want us to do, and we can do this, y'all. I said one of them, you need to get a trusted news source, because we can't predict what's going to happen with so-called free speech. This is the first thing that usually goes under fascism or under an authoritarian government. And we've seen attacks on it already. Get a trusted news source. There are a couple of petitions. One of them is related to the signatures that I just said we collected, because we need to send a message to the state that we know what's going on. We know their little tricks, and we still want those signatures to count, and we don't want that map enacted until we have a decision at the ballot box next year. So it's looking like, because it's so many signatures, they have to take those through a vetting process that probably won't be completed until February. So I'm going to keep you updated on that. Any legal challenges or developments, definitely. But on my website, there's going to be a place where you can get that signature, get to that petition that says, we know what's going on, what you're doing. We went through all the legal channel. We got the petition, we got the wording, we got it, and we collected all the signatures. Now we've turned them in. So we did our part, and we did it correctly. We did it with dignity. We did it. We were principled the way that we did it. So now you got to do your part, and that's protect the process. So that's going to be on it. The other petition that's on there is one that says we are asking the Attorney General, who keeps leaving open the ability to go after men and women who've already been exonerated. This is some scary stuff, y'all. Now, you've been languishing in prison for 15, 20, 24 years, and you get out by hook or by crook. Now the Attorney General said, yeah, we know that, but we still are going to fight that. So this petition basically says, do your job, which is about justice, it's about truth. And once people have been exonerated by a court, these exonerations are really not about technicality. These are actual claims of innocence. Now, we had Frederico Lobet on here about a month ago, and his story has been running on Channel 4. Very interesting. People are like, why is he still in there? This is what I'm talking about. He hasn't even been exonerated, but he's trying to be exonerated. But if all of these obstacles get put in people who are innocent, as opposed to the system who helped get them there taking a leading role in trying to exonerate them, something's wrong with that picture. And then when they get exonerated by no help from them, then they say, oh, we're going to leave it open and we're still going to come after you. That is not a system of justice, but we know that's what it is. It is what it is, but we have to do our part. So those are two petitions that are going to be on my website. The other thing I just think we do, and I've talked about that, is stop saying enough is enough, unless after that you say enough is enough and here's what I'm going to do. If you're not going to say that, I just think we shouldn't even be saying that out loud, as if the mere saying of it is going to mean change. What means change brings change is people working together in a very specific way, in a very strategic way, to turn things around or to end a particular injustice. It doesn't happen only by a protest. It doesn't happen only because you say it. It doesn't even happen with a prayer. You got to do something. Some action has to come after that. And I just think that's part of the thing. I think Leslie Jones, when she said complacent, like, we think somebody else is going to do this. We're not willing to do the work because somebody else has done it for us. This is a new day, y'all. And don't be telling me like we've been here before, black people been, no, this is something new and different. We are resilient people because we've never had that much. And we know how to, you know, rub two nickels together. This is going to be very different. So let's act like we are empowered, critical thinking people, that we know how to problem solve. So that's what we want to do. So we want to find our people. We want to be active. We don't want to be, you know, hung up on sloganeering. We want to be engaged and in motion. We want to get results. So I have all the faith in me, and I'm gonna need y'all to have my back when I go into trial in February, when I go to Jeff City. So we're gonna keep you in engaged and informed. There's gonna be a bus for those people who want to go up there, and so we'll keep you all informed about that. But when we go, we have to let those folks know we are not playing. We are not playing. That police department is going to be more militarized than it's ever been. There's going to be more surveillance on our people than it's ever been. And it's not for our own safety. It's not going to be for our public safety. It's going to be for the people who have property, the people who own and control the resources that we are trying to get our fair share of. So don't go for the okie doke. You know, and some of us have. We want cameras in our alley. How's that working for you? So I am going to be as active as I possibly can. I am going to be reflecting about what else am I going to do differently in 2026. And I want to find out from you what you're doing. And we're going to have some, you know, additional people on the show who are fighting wherever they are. And we've had some of those people. But if you know some, hit me up. Let me know. We need to hear their stories. But I'm going to leave you with an inspirational message that came out during COVID by Roz Baraka. And Roz Baraka is now the mayor of Newark, New Jersey. But I know the Baraka family well. I knew Roz when he was a baby. But every time I hear his piece, I get so emotional. And it is what we want. And that's what it's called, what we want. I can't say it any better than Roz Baraka. So I'm going to sign off now. But I feel you. I feel the pain of what's going on in this particular period. And I don't like feeling pain. And I don't like seeing other people in pain. And so, again, exist, organize, organize, organize. That's why Kwame Ture would say it three times, because that's how powerful it is. Organize, organize, organize. And so we got to do that in 2026. And we got to do it with purpose and direction. No more enough is enough unless we're saying, here's what we're going to do to make sure that it's enough, that it's going to be the end of that particular injustice. So I wish you the best for the coming year. Be safe, stay healthy, stay sane, stay woke. All of those are necessary for the comings that we got coming. And so I'm gonna stop there and just know that I got much love for everybody, and I feel the love from you. So we're gonna make it happen, y'all.
We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing right now.